produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We have a special stash for you today leading up to the HempFest event in Seattle. We've got the man who brings it all together, Vivian McPeak, with an interview today. And later on, we'll also hear from the band Gypsy Foot. They'll be on the main stage Sunday afternoon. Let's start with our interview with Vivian McPeak. Taking place this weekend is one of the shining stars of the cannabis and hemp reform movement, Seattle's HempFest, which draws over 100,000 attendees. Normal's founder Keith Strupp and executive director Ellen St. Pierre will be in attendance and speaking at the event, which has become perhaps the most visible gathering in America promoting reform. Joining us today from Seattle is Vivian McPeak, the coordinator of Seattle's HempFest, again taking place this weekend at Myrtle Edwards Park in Seattle. The veritable army of dedicated volunteers have begun to assemble the infrastructure today. Vivian, welcome to the Audio Stash.
Well, thanks a lot. It's very good to be here.
Many thanks for taking time this very busy week to join us. Someone mentioned recently that HempFest is becoming one of the largest music events in the country. Who are some of the bands performing this year?
Well, you know, I'm not sure it's the largest music festival, but I certainly know that it's the largest pot rally, and certainly the largest free music festival in the Pacific Northwest. We got a great lineup set for this year. There's this real up-and-coming kind of chart-rising band called Rehab. I don't know if you've ever heard their song Graffiti the World, but they're just an amazing group, and they're very politically relevant and just across the board musically. We've got some real good stuff this year. We've got Los Marijuanos, which are a movement-oriented group, hip-hop and stuff, and these guys are just great. We've got John Sinclair on the Seattle Blues Scholars. John Sinclair was one of the founding members of the White Panthers in the 60s, and connected. He was a manager of MC5, which was a cannabis-based kind of revolutionary band. And essentially, we've got four stages of free music going on all weekend, and so many kind of genres and bands, it would take me a while to list them all.
So last year, there were over 100,000 people at the event. Are you expecting an even bigger turnout this year, and what's the crowd like?
You know, I would think that it would be a little bit bigger this year, and it looks like we're going to have good weather. We've got a great lineup of speakers. You know, if you told us in 1991 that 15 years later the chief of police would be speaking on our stage, I would have thought you were mad. But that's exactly what we have going on. We've got the former Seattle police chief, Norm Stamper, who wrote a great book called Breaking Rank, and he's going to be there to talk about legalization and why he thinks it's important to really fight crime and violence in America to legalize marijuana and potentially other drugs. We've got Randy Rhoads, a national-level MC and DJ that you see often, sometimes on CNN, giving Bush a hard time. She's going to be one of our guest MCs some of the time. Of course, we've got Alan St. Pierre and Keith Strop from Normal and Rob Camper from Marijuana Policy Project. And we pretty much have a who's who of the cannabis and drug policy reform movements coming to speak this year. And as far as attendees go, God, we have such a cross-section, such a huge demographic of all walks of life coming to HempFest. It's really hard to characterize them, except we just got a good portion of Seattle a lot of folks coming from the outlying states.
You mentioned Norm Stamper will be there, but you also have a number of the Seattle City Councilors coming by.
A couple council members, yeah. We've got Peter Steinbrook, and Seattle City Council member, and also Nick Licata, the president of the Seattle City Council, coming to speak. And in the past, we've had other city council and county council members come. So, you know, I think it's real unusual for an event of our nature to be getting this kind of level of speakers. And we really feel it's because we've been able to really work very hard and diligently to put across the message of personal responsibility for adult users.
Vivian, perhaps even more impressive than the 100,000 attendees are the volunteers you coordinate this week to make sure the event actually happens. How many volunteers are involved with the actual mechanics of Seattle's HempFest this year?
God, thanks for asking that question, because it's funny. The media is usually so not interested in this, and to me it seems the most compelling aspect of our entire operation. We've got a 7-member steering committee that meets almost all the time, and then we have a 100-person core group that meets once a month with a big core meeting every month, and then it breaks down. And then come the weekend of the event, we've got over 1,000 staff members, and we're 100% volunteer. Even the bands come forward to play for free, and it's a very unique operation, that level. I'm not sure of another event that's our size that's completely volunteer.
And these volunteers are really working. I mean, this is hard labor, building tents, hospital tents, vendor tents, fences, and stages. Not only does it take their personal dedication, but HempFest makes sure the volunteers are taken care of so they can get their job done.
Well, we take possession of the park on the Wednesday before the event, and then we give it up on the Tuesday after. So we're on site for a full 7 days. And you're right, that includes building the 5 stages, all the canopies, the tent structures, all the infrastructure, the fencing, all that kind of stuff. Our volunteers, we have a complete staff kitchen with hot food coming out on a regular basis, including with aluminum or stainless steel refrigeration units and stuff like that that we actually truck in for the event. And we have a coat check and a bag check for our staff members. We've got really good hospitality backstage, and of course we've got a complete first aid operation on site and stuff if anything should happen to anybody, whether they're a staff member or an attendee. And of course everybody gets their HempFest staff shirt, which they're forbidden to sell or trade with anybody else.
You know, a good friend here in New Mexico traveled up last year for HempFest, and she was staying in Seattle a few days after and happened upon the park the day after the event was over. And she was so struck with how many volunteers were out there cleaning up and tearing down. You know, so often these volunteer-run events, the volunteers disappear when the show is over. But that is not the case at HempFest.
You know, we've been together for 15 years, and we've kind of got this philosophy that you can destroy a business, you can tear apart an organization, but you can only separate a family. And really the way we're approached after all these years, it really is kind of a big family. And I have found personally that, in my opinion, you can get people to work longer and harder for something that they believe in and for ideals and principles they share and values than for any amount of money. And that's kind of what we've experienced.
Vivian, I have to ask, what kind of response you've had from Seattle's community to HempFest over the years? You know, 100,000 people, this is a huge event now. Is HempFest treated a bit differently now?
Well, you know, it's changed over the years. And originally, there was a lot of contention, obviously, between the authorities and the local residents, the local community, and stuff like that. But over the years, we've really kind of earned their respect, and we have a great working relationship with the city government, and we have, I think, an exceptional relationship with the Seattle Police Department and the Port Police Department, considering the controversial nature of our event. And you know, let's face it, 100,000 people come to a cannabis reform rally. Some of them are going to light up, and the police have been very reasonable with us. And you know, over the years, we've developed a working relationship where we're pretty straight up with them, and they're pretty straight up with us. And the last few years, we've had no citations for smoking and no arrests.
And there must be a big swath of the city, you know, hotels and restaurants, the ice cream vendors for sure, who very much look forward to this event each year.
Well, I know that the one of the most expensive hotels in Seattle, Edgewater, right next to us, is always full up every year, and I know we bring a lot of money into the city, and we're proud of that. We love Seattle. We want to do good for our city.
Vivian, how can our listeners find out more about Seattle's HempFest and others maybe make one of their own?
Well, folks can go to hempfest.org, and we've got a whole lot of information up there. They could find out quite a lot about our event and our organization as well. And, you know, I just came from the Spokane HempFest a couple weeks ago. The Portland Hemp Fest just happened, and the Eugene Hemp Fest, and no, the Missoula Hemp Fest is coming up. So these things are, it's not limited to Seattle. We might be the biggest, but we're not the only one. And so I just encourage people to look around in their state and their region and see how they could support the movement there. And if there's not one, then think about putting one on. You can start real small. It's totally legal. You're still in America. And, you know, you've got the right to remain silent. But a lot of Americans need to remember you have the right not to remain silent as well.
And if you're in the Northwest region, there's no other place to be Saturday and Sunday than Myrtle Edwards Park in Seattle. More information is available at SeattleHempFest.com. Vivian, thanks again for joining us today.
No problem.
And if there's no way you can make it up there in person, Seattle's HempFest can always use your support. Consider a donation to HempFest today to make sure it's even bigger next year. We have a special promotion for Normal Daily Audio Stash listeners who are in attendance at Seattle's HempFest this weekend. Visit the Normal and High Times magazine tent. That's at booth number 429 near the main stage. Mindful that you want to be prepared for any police encounters during marijuana prohibition, ask the Normal staffers at the event and get a free Normal Freedom card, and you'll also get a free Normal pin just for caring about your rights. Make sure you hook up with Normal at HempFest. What a great place to join the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in person. You can meet up with Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, Normal's founder, Keith Strupp, get a free Freedom card and a free Normal pin. Just stop by the High Times Normal tent at booth number 429 near the main stage at Seattle's HempFest this weekend. Link up to Seattle's HempFest right on our website or go there directly. Just go to www.seattlehempfest.com. Next up today, we got some music from a band that will be on the main stage Sunday evening at Seattle's HempFest. Here's the Gypsy Foot Band with this track, Passing Phase. Want to give a big thanks to the Gypsy Foot Band for allowing us to play this track in the podcast today. We have links to these guys right up at normalaudiostash.com.
Sing and joy and harmony will ring true as the world fills with anything you search for in life, you'll find it. Anything you search for in life, you'll find it. We'll be right back.
that was music from a band that will be on the main stage at Seattle's Hempfest this Sunday. That was the Gypsy Foot Band with that track Passing Phase. I want to give a big thanks again to Gypsy Foot for allowing us to podcast that track today. We got links to these guys at normalaudiostash.com. Now it's time for our regular weekly interview with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis in Action segment. Associate Professor of Psychology at State University of New York and author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. We have links to the book at normalaudiostash.com, and Dr. Earlywine joins us each Wednesday on the Stash to discuss the science of cannabis. Mitch, welcome back to the program today.
Great to be back.
Thanks again for joining us today. Yesterday, we focused on the news about Alzheimer's and THC. Studies regarding cannabinoids and the brain often point to the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. You know, Mitch, what sort of general effects on the body do antioxidants and anti-inflammatories have?
Well, antioxidants are all about decreasing the amount of oxidized chemicals that are in your body. Every day you're, you know, basically burning food in order to make energy for yourself, and that essentially requires oxygen and creates certain oxidized byproducts. An antioxidant keeps those from having a lot of negative consequence for you in your body. Anti-inflammatories are really just any substance that'll keep inflammation down, keep cells from getting all puffed up with various prostaglandins or other things that might be a sign that they're either neighboring some injured cells or been injured themselves.
And what are the common everyday things that can cause inflammation in the body?
Well, what's interesting is almost any kind of small injury, so any kind of twisting or breaking of cells is going to cause some inflammation. But then a whole lot of our, you know, everyday sort of things that we do, if you brush your teeth too hard, if you bang your elbow, anything like that. And then there's some mild inflammation associated with any kind of toxins. So if you've got bad things in your water, bad things in the air, things along those lines, the body basically causes a little bit of inflammation to help get those things out of your system.
We're sort of hearing from all quarters in the health field now that anti-inflammatories are good for the body. But do cannabis smokers or edible cannabis consumers gain these anti-inflammatory effects?
Well, as it turns out, smoked cannabis, medical cannabis, does have some anti-inflammatory qualities. We're not at the stage of research where we can say this is going to have an impact on Alzheimer's disease or serious, you know, inflammation associated with the brain. But the cannabinoid system, the system that's activated by THC, cannabidiol, and other of the you know, components of the plant, definitely alters with exposure to those, and also is very much involved with just sort of keeping the body lubricated, if you will, keeping it oiled up and protected against inflammation and the stresses and strains of those sorts of things.
Mitch, in the news yesterday, it was the antioxidant properties of cannabidiol that were attributed to stopping the aggregation of the brain plaques associated with Alzheimer's disease. But what other effects can taking antioxidants have on the body?
Well, the beauty of antioxidants is when you start thinking of some of the other ones, vitamin C, vitamin E, things along those lines that basically have the potential at least to make cells live longer, make cells more resistant to disease and disorder, and generally, you know, keep people healthy. It's still a big leap from the research that we have to say that smoking marijuana is going to necessarily cause all of these effects, but we have seen wonderful animal studies suggesting that the inflammation associated with certain brain problems and even some brain injuries can definitely be decreased
by exposure to cannabinoids.
The scientist in the Scripps research study yesterday was quick to point out that he did not advocate people using illicit drugs to gain the benefits reported in his study. So these anti-inflammatory and antioxidant effects, they may not take place so actively with inhaled cannabis per se.
Exactly. It's still a long leap from these studies done in petri dishes and on mice and rats to say that smoking cannabis is somehow going to eliminate Alzheimer's. We're just nowhere near that kind of statement at all.
You know, Mitch, a number of the MS patients who I've spoken with and who use cannabis therapeutically have told me there are three major benefits for them. One, increased mobility. Two, decreased pain. And number three, and they all point this out, is decreased depression. Are the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties of cannabinoids perhaps playing a role in this?
In fact, I have data of my own suggesting that regular cannabis users are probably less depressed than folks who've never used. And the inflammation is often the source of restricted range of motion in MS and a whole lot of other disorders. So folks I know with spinal cord injury who also have problems with motion and movement claim that cannabis seems to help them. And arthritis patients also seem to have some inflammation problems that are alleviated with medical cannabis. I wish we could do, you know, the randomized clinical trials that are needed in order to get FDA approval for this kind of thing, particularly given how many people suffer from those disorders and how many folks have, you know, basically arthritis in their future. As the U.S. is getting older and older, we're going to find more and more people who really do need this medication.
And what research has been done regarding the specific strains of cannabis and their specific antioxidant or anti-inflammatory properties?
GW Pharmaceuticals is doing their very best to get specific strains of cannabis with different concentrations of different cannabinoids in order to see which ones are most effective for different people. I feel like that's really the wave of the future. Right now in the United States, the only way to get cannabis for clinical trials is through the University of Mississippi, and they really only have one strain of cannabis. So it's hard to know what the plant is capable of when you're really only using one little subspecies of it.
In the Alzheimer's news yesterday, and also in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences study, the researchers said the antioxidant properties and effects remained happening in the brain cells even if the cannabinoid receptors were blocked by an antagonist. What could be happening here?
That's often a result that you'll need to replicate before you know exactly what's going on. But if you block that receptor and still get the neuroprotective effects, it's clear that this is working in another domain. It's not working at the receptor site that we usually think of it working. And when you think about how inflammation works because a whole bunch of other chemicals are essentially flooding the cell. So it may not be so much that you have to fire a nerve cell in order to make this happen, so much as just interfere with the way other fluids are flooding the cell, and that may be how these cannabinoids are working.
Mitch, I want to thank you once again today for joining us here on the Audio Stash and helping us understand all of this science.
Always a pleasure.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is Associate Professor of Psychology at State University of New York and author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. We have links to the book and an Audio Stash interview archive with all of our segments with Dr. Earlywine at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Vivian McPeak, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and the Gypsy Foot Band for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.